All right. This is Lois Pollack, chairperson of the Code Enforcement Subcommittee for the IAPC, Tucson, Arizona. This is June 30th, and it's 11:01 a.m., and we're starting our meeting for today. So first of all, I'd like to do the roll call. And
I will do that.
Perfect.
All right. So representing Ward 4, Commissioner Brian Andrews. And Commissioner Andrews has informed us he may be unable to attend. Representing Ward 5, Commissioner Robert Clark.
I'm here.
Representing Ward 6, Commissioner Lois Pollack.
Here.
And that does give us a quorum for the meeting.
Okay, great. So the first order of business is to review the previous meeting minutes from the subcommittee dated June 1, 2022. And I think we got a copy of that.
Sorry, Commissioner Pollack.
Oh, you're right.
Yes.
It's
yes,
May,
subcommittee.
May 9, 2022. Okay. May 9, 2022 was the last year. Yes.
I've had an opportunity to review the minutes that were provided. I move that we accept them as written, as edited.
Okay, and I'll second that. So I guess you and I can vote. All in favor, say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, we're going to, we've approved the previous meeting minutes as documented. Okay, and the, let's see here. Just go to the next order of business. Which is to get staff updates. Business services staff will provide an update.
I think you got the wrong agenda.
I'm looking at the wrong one. I get way too many emails from the commission. Okay, so let me find today's. I think the next order of business was just to discuss the report, if I remember correctly.
You are correct, Commissioner Pollack. So if you like, I have that report pulled up and I can share my screen.
Okay.
As it was discussed.
Now, Commissioner Clark, did you get a copy, an email of the report?
I did.
Perfect.
So I had left some of your highlights highlighted because I thought those might be areas that you wanted to narrow in on, but I'm not sure. So,
yeah, I think so basically I left them highlighted because I wanted to check on them, fact checking. And so that was the reason. Because I'd put it together and then I didn't have time to review it and see if there was additional changes. But I, so anyhow, Commissioner Clark, do you have any comments about the draft so far?
I have a couple. I realize I'm the new boy on the block.
Uh-huh.
But the first thing on the first page under number two,
uh-huh,
it seems to me that we are stating facts that are kind of speculative. That section, it says right at the very bottom, additionally, due to the tight housing market and increased prices, residents who rent may be on fixed incomes and are not willing to report the code issues for fear of being evicted. It seems to me that that's speculation. We should add a may there.
Now, what page is that on?
First page.
First
under number
page.
Two.
Item number two. Item number two. I'm not sure.
I'm sorry, third page.
Third under page. Auto, okay.
Number two.
Oh, okay.
Right. Right here.
We're doing a fair amount of speculation rather than having facts to support us.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Let me just preface that by saying that I'm obviously new on this committee, and there may have been facts that were presented that I didn't hear.
Well, I think maybe it needs to be reworded, like you're saying. We could use words like CE practices appear to be exclusionary and may pit residents against residents. And yeah, so it would be, you know, this is a tough one because we don't have a lot of facts to go on. And after doing, you know, this lengthy process of interviews and everything, we didn't interview anybody who uses the system.
Right.
And so as far as from the community. And I don't know how we would do that. However, it is a huge factor.
Might I suggest that when we're dealing with the solutions to number two, the problem that you present on the report, that we might suggest a tighter coordination with the homeowners associations. And supply them perhaps on a fairly regular basis, maybe yearly or semi-yearly, on what the code enforcement does and can do, and ask them to present that among their homeowners.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because this, and so let me just get that right.
Are you making edits on your version, Commissioner?
No, I'm just making notes to myself, not on the document, because it's too difficult to try and make changes on the document as we're talking. It's just Commissioner Clark.
Since I'm sharing my screen, I could make any language edits.
I don't think it'll work because there's way too many changes that are going to need to be made, I think.
That's fine. I'll just take notes on the changes.
Can you show your view in one page, in a single page at a time? Because this is so small, we can't read it. Let's see here. And if you can blow it up.
There it is.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, great. Okay. Okay, so, well, you know what? Why don't we start at the top and just go page by page and see what you think. So the first page is meant to be basically just here's what the approach was. Why we did the audit is in the first couple of paragraphs. And things like attachment A, I put in there, it should be the letter and the information that received from Ward 3 office. There's a couple of pages. So I wanted that to be attachment A. And then the rest of it, the next paragraph down, was an explanation of why did this thing take so long, you know, and who was on the committee, what happened after that happened, and then the fact that we had a big break in the meetings because there wasn't enough people on the IAPC commission. So I wanted that to be in writing too, because that I thought was important for the historical record. And then I tried to capture the scope and the three main focuses, which came right from the letter from Ward 3. And again, attachment B would be the audit scope. And then the next part, review of city codes and CE procedures, that was basically, if I remember correctly, and I have a lot of notes, but I did want to go through and fact check some of this. This is how we went about the audit. Reviewing the codes with code enforcement. Who is responsible for enforcing it, and the fact that we, and then we interviewed a lot of people from code enforcement. Then we had two of the subcommittee commissioners go out in the field and watch. Oh yeah, I know. That was fun. And then we got samples of the CE cases that we each looked, and how we determined the statistical sample size and things like that. So I thought all that was pretty straightforward. Do you think that this first couple pages looks okay?
Well, the first page, I'm up to the audit results, I'm absolutely in accord with.
Yeah, the first page.
The only time I have with this session is, of course, we're not getting Brian's input.
Yeah. So then we get to page two, like you said. And then I tried to just use the three, you know, you have to use the three bullet points. That was the scope. And then I tried to break those up. But yeah, I know what you're saying. We don't have information on some of this, and we knew after talking to, we have limited information, like alignment of current practices with legal requirements. We didn't get into the legal requirements.
We got a pretty good overview of what they do, though, especially the court proceedings.
Yeah. Yes. And so there's that first paragraph that says, titled Alignment of Current Practices with Legal Requirements.
Right.
Many codes are enforced, but using a complaint-based system. And this is my thought on this, and I don't know if you guys agree or not. That's where we need to kind of look through and maybe get a red line from everybody. This type of system does not ensure that all city codes are enforced. I think that's probably pretty true, because
the problem is, as you bring out later, whether or not the rental people, for instance, know that they have a right to complain.
Well, there's a lot of factors, you know, that I only know because I deal with this thing every week. And so, yes, it's hard not to put my, you know, bias in there. So I want to somehow, I don't know. I don't know exactly what we should do next. I mean, maybe we should interview a couple of neighborhood association presidents or something and get their opinion on, or their view on how the process works. We didn't do that yet.
I don't have much information on that either. I know that my homeowners association has its own enforcement. We have an architectural committee for making sure that the standards of the committee are kept. You can't paint your house orange. We have problems with cars that aren't in the garage. That we can't leave cars on the street at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we, in my homeowners association, we have our own enforcement and our own people. The management association comes around and checks on things.
You're lucky. Yeah.
I had a complaint because one of my trees had gotten so bushy it was hanging down over the sidewalk, and I had to go and trim them out because I got a complaint from them.
It's funny. I mean, the people that live in city sanctioned neighborhoods, I call them, we're just at the mercy of the codes and the people to enforce them and whether they get enforced or not. So, go ahead, Leah.
Oh, no, I think, Commissioner Clark, you bring up a good point that if people are in homeowners associations outside of the city, that they, those little neighborhoods, will have their own code enforcement.
Mine is right in the city, so.
Yeah, but I know, like, because depending on, like, the neighborhood you live in, there may be its own homeowners association. But then there's, like, the historic neighborhoods that maybe there's a neighborhood association, but it's not like you're part of a, you're not paying monthly dues to a HOA that do upkeep of the neighborhood.
Well, let me just say that, you know, I live kind of central on off of Broadway and Rosemont, and we have our, it's a gated community, and we have our own homeowners association, but there's also a larger homeowners association from Rosemont West that is not a gated community. It's a regular thing, but they do have their own association. So,
yeah. Well, so just to be clear, HOAs, they overrule the city codes, basically. They have to meet minimum codes, but the city has, I don't even know if the city has any jurisdiction at all inside of there, normally. Now, if things are so bad and the HOA doesn't do anything, it may be an option for people in an HOA to report it to the city. But in city sanctioned neighborhoods, of which there's 145 of them or something, we do not have HOAs. We can't charge dues, and we're not allowed to have any other rules other than these codes.
There are general associations for various parts of the city, though, are there not? Big associations.
There's 145 of them, or 100 and some odd of them. And they are not HOAs. They cannot charge monthly fees or dues, membership. You cannot charge money, and you cannot put any kind of constraints on anybody other than what are written in the city codes.
But there are associations that deal with the city. I know that I represent Mr. Fingres from Ward 5, and I know that he regularly meets with the various associations within Ward 5 if there's going to be any changes, any developments, and there's a lot of contact there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the way the rest of the city works, but in Ward 5 it does.
So it's a requirement by the city. If you have a neighborhood association, they term them, that you must, to be recognized by the city, you must have a board. You must have a president, vice president, treasurer, and a secretary. And every year you have to have elections, and they all have their own bylaws. You have to have elections, and you have to report who the current, once a year you have to report to the city clerk or actually somebody in neighborhood department. You have to report who those officers are. But it's all volunteer, and it's all, and so are HOAs, pretty much. But
those are the ones that I thought the communication from the code enforcement bureau.
No.
They could contact them.
They could.
Let them know what the current code enforcement regulations are and ask them to distribute them among their homeowners.
You know what? There's no money to do it. And so the city, like in my neighborhood association, I have 3,400 residences and 6,800 residents. There is no way to contact them. The city provides a once a year mailing, to set, and it costs, because it costs a lot. So if you take a 56-cent stamp, plus the printing, and mail it out to the homeowner's home, to every address in the neighborhood, it costs well over $1,700, $2,000 each time. Back in the old days, they used to give us a mailing every month. And then they said, nope, not doing that anymore. Cut all that off, just boom. And so it cut off communication to the residents. And so now we only get a once a year communication, if you even use it. So we just sent out ours in the last 2 weeks, and the city doesn't care if you use that mailing to your residents or not. And so the way they communicate code issues is through the water bill. And they send a little flyer out. It's very common to see something on, you know, it's a code issue to have your grass and weeds over 6 inches tall. You know, please, you know, cut those down and, you know, don't put furniture at the curb except at your two times a year brush and bulky pickup. So they use the water bill. And
well, I wonder if they include that, the code enforcement number that you can, or the email that you can call and make complaints.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they do. Yeah, I'm sure it's in there. So we have a, like, just to give you an example, I mean, our neighborhood association, we have to get everybody's name by hand. So as I'm walking around, and we send our once a year flyer out, people will write us and say, put me on your newsletter list. And in our newsletter and on our website for this neighborhood, every single phone number is written down in there. You got graffiti, you got code enforcement, you got the police, you got, you know, pothole people, you have it all. But I can tell you for a fact, there's probably maybe out of 6,800 residents, maybe 50 of them use those numbers a year. And the same people report over and over and over again.
I know, but if we're evaluating the Code Enforcement Bureau, I don't know that they could be held responsible for the lack of community involvement.
Well, but then there's a lot of factors. And so maybe I can, they can't be held accountable for that. However, no neighborhood in town, and I know that because I've attended numerous neighborhood meetings over the last 15 years, no neighborhood in town likes the fact that you have to report a code issue. And that it, because neighbors hate each other for it. And I just recently had an incident here where somebody got reported for weeds in their front yard, and they have them. So it's not like they don't have them. And they want it, first thing they did is went across to the neighbor and accused that person of reporting them and basically wanted to harm them. And so all of us in all the neighborhoods want a proactive preventive method of identifying code issues. And the city could do it if they wanted to. And we've had numerous meetings with code enforcement and the police and the neighborhood associations around town. Because there is a umbrella group for all of the neighborhood associations, and there is another group in town. So there's an umbrella group called TRRG, Tucson Residents for Responsible Government. They meet and invite all the neighborhood associations. So we have a lot of communication that way. They have sponsored code enforcement to come at least a couple of times. They sponsored transportation and the city manager and environmental services. They sponsor them all to come, and they talk about, you know, what they're doing and everything. But over the years, everybody, their biggest complaint about this process is that it is complaint-based. And we have, like in my neighborhood, we have easily 80% rental in one square half mile, another 70% rental in another half square mile, and probably the same in another one. And so those people don't want to lose their housing, especially right now. So they won't report anything because the owners just kick them out. You know, and because the owners know how the property is. So, yeah, and then people living in rentals, they don't care about properties. So we've been pushing for, you know, that neighborhood group has been pushing for some kind of proactive sweeps, if you want to call them, across each neighborhood in the city at some interval. We've been pushing for that for years. Nope, we don't have enough resources. Can't do that. So they're keeping us tied into this reporting, you know, you can only be as good as the people who report. And that's why I say it's discriminatory, because there are certain very active neighborhoods, and there are neighborhoods that aren't very active. And so they don't have anybody reporting.
Well, obviously your involvement is far more extensive than mine. My problem with what you suggest.
Yeah.
My only experience in Germany, where they have, for instance, a television, patrol. If you're not hooked up to the commercial television, they have a patrol that goes through and can spot you and charge you for it.
Yeah, yeah, we'd love that.
That's hated. I mean, that's hated. They.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like, because it's like it's Big Brother.
Demanding, it's like demanding inoculations, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah, I know. Well, you know, it's funny. Because when someone moves into an HOA, you agree basically that you're going to follow the HOA rules because they're in writing. Well,
right. The
city codes are the same way. They're in writing. And when you move to the city of whatever, Tucson in this case, you have to know that you're agreeing to the codes.
Yeah, and, but when you go in a homeowners association, you have a written document that tells you what the conditions are.
And oh, yeah.
You agree to something that's set forth there, and if you didn't read it, shame on you.
Well, it's the same way with the city, because these codes that we reviewed, Section 16 predominantly, because it's the Neighborhood Preservation Code, but they're available online, access, the city has them. They're hard to find, hard to read, hard to interpret sometimes. But a lot of them are very straightforward. People just don't think of it like that. They think about HOAs and how much they don't want to live in an HOA sometimes because it's very restrictive. But they don't.
What I'm suggesting, though, is that in an HOA, you do, in fact, have to have, you have been provided with the information there in front of you.
Yes.
You sign off on it with full knowledge. I don't know that anybody who moves into a rental has any knowledge of the code enforcement.
Well, anybody who moves into a city, period. You don't get a, hey, welcome to Tucson letter, you know, when you move here. So, yeah, so there's no way. And some rentals, and Tucson is, the last time I looked at it, Tucson is the national average, or what, this was already a couple of years ago, of about 48-point-something% rental. So it's not like we have 75% owner occupied. No, we have 50% rental pretty much, or more now. And sometimes renters don't pay their own water. Often they don't. So right. they don't even get the notice in the water bill. So yeah, that, okay, well, how do I contact them? If they don't pay their own utilities at all, it's up to them, the property owner, to ensure that they get the information. So that's another big problem, because then it puts the, you know, puts that onus on the property owner, and they don't do it, you know.
What it seems to me is we're talking here.
Yeah, yeah.
Beyond the Code Enforcement Bureau, you wouldn't expect them to go and run surveys around the various neighborhoods and make complaints.
Yes.
How to deal with the complaints that they get.
Well, you know what? I reread the code enforcement manual yesterday, and that was one thing I wanted to talk about too, but it was different in the old days. 15 years ago, code enforcement, they'd drive up to a house that had a report. They'd look on at least both sides of the house, and they would open cases on other property if it was really bad. And but they don't do that anymore. The code enforcement procedure says that they can and they will look at adjacent properties, but only take action on emergencies. Okay. Well, you don't want to tie their hands, you know, and say that they're going to do something that they can't. But the biggest question from people who have a code officer coming up to their door is, what about my neighbor? You came up here to tell me about a junk motor vehicle in my yard, but my neighbor on both sides, they have them too. And so that's, you, I don't think you were in on that when, Mr. De La Torre from Code Enforcement, said that they enforce the codes to the degree that is basically acceptable in the neighborhood that they're in. And so if you live in a very nice neighborhood, like, you know, Colonial Solano, you don't see junk in the yards. You don't see motor vehicles. And if somebody does have furniture at the curb or something, they immediately call code enforcement, open a complaint. Whereas in my neighborhood, it's bigger, 1 square mile. I have at least 30 residents at once who have furniture at the curb. And junk motor vehicles in the yard, trees that are dead, ready to fall down, which is also an ordinance. And then as you get in worse neighborhoods, and worse meaning, you know, I don't know how you even define that, but more code issues every other house, they pretty much say, well, you know, we're going to go up to this house because somebody reported it and we're going to tell them what's wrong, but they're going to give them a lot more latitude. And so maybe what was not okay to the code, they will give them some wiggle room, in a not so good neighborhood. So for instance, you can't have a junk motor vehicle that doesn't run, is missing car parts, up on jack stands. You cannot have that in your yard, period. And, that's what the code says. And so, and I was just reading that in the book last night. You can't just cover it with a car cover. You right. have to actually put it in the driveway, or put it in the backyard, screen it. You know, you have to get rid of it basically. But in a not so good neighborhood, they might just allow them to put a car cover on that. And so that's what I mean about it's not, And they told us that it depends on the neighborhood they're in. That's what code enforcement said. And that's just ridiculous because all the city is doing with this activity is either ensuring the neighborhood stays the same or never improves. So who would want that? When at the very beginning of the book in the code enforcement manual, it says it's to for beautification and to preserve the looks and quality of life in the city. So yeah, it's a very weird, weird thing. And they've even had so anyhow.
The other side of that though is number one, I don't think the Code Enforcement Bureau could take on a lot of new cases, even self-generated. The other problem is farther down on your list.
Uh-huh.
Is what you do about it, getting the fines, trying to collect the money, going to the court. The court system is so backed up, it's incredible.
Well,
and that's not code enforcement's problem, it's the court's problem.
Well, code enforcement doesn't cause a case to go to court. They have to go and defend their side. But if they're slow at enforcement, then it's the whole thing. I was just looking up last night how the city, well, so here's one. For 20 years, 15, 20 years, they've pretty much refused to charge the $75 reinspection fee. And the thinking was for 15 years, everybody in Tucson is so poor, we cannot possibly burden them with $75. And you're going, this doesn't make any sense. Yes, there are some people that are low income, but they also never require them to sign an affidavit or anything saying that they are low income and they can't afford it. So they refuse to put that $75 fee, even though it clearly states that they should. And that just teaches everybody there's no consequences. And the code enforcement inspectors will come back over and over and over again and spend more and more money coming back to get something abated because they see their goal as abatement, period. Not abatement at reasonable cost, but abatement at any cost. And so it's kind of like, okay, now you've just taught everybody that it's okay to not do anything because the code enforcement inspector will just keep coming back. And they're not going to take a, if I had 6-inch tall weeds in my, at my curb, they're not taking that to court. It costs too much money. And so they'll just keep going back and back and back. And so, yeah, I don't know. Over the years, they've taught people, they've taught landowners that they don't need to comply. And so that's too bad because that's a paradigm you need to shift. And they, so, you know, what we didn't quite get in our case outlook, we didn't get enough cases to look into if that was really the case or not. There's a few that they went back and looked at. None of them said they issued the reinspection fee. And it's like, okay, so there's no fine, no nothing. And the courts, we have a single code enforcement judge or magistrate, they call him. And he waives all fines, usually. And I looked last night, I'm like, how does that magistrate get in that position? Because they all claim they can't do anything about it. And I found what I think is that, and it says that they're appointed by the mayor and council. Well, then we need to find a magistrate who will carry out the spirit of the code issues and not just let everybody off with hundreds and thousands of dollars worth of fines. Nope, canceled. You finally cleaned that problem up that was egregious for 30 of your residents. No problem. Okay, fine, dismissed. You don't believe it until you go to the court cases. And it's like, oh boy, this is nuts. But anyhow, what about, I probably can't say some of this stuff in the report because we didn't interview anybody. So I don't know. The only conclusion we can arrive at, some of it is, they need more people to enforce the codes, and they don't have enough people. We didn't hit on repetitive issues. We'd have to look at a lot more cases and pull out repetitive issues. We'd have to look at whether properties were rentals or not. This audit could go on for a long time if you wanted it to. And I'm not sure what they're expecting, but so maybe we come down to recommendations, on that third page, there was recommendations on additional CE inspectors to handle larger caseloads and conduct the research they need to conduct because they have to do a lot. Because if something is an LLC, oh boy, you got to go find the fiduciary, and but that takes a while. Because sometimes there's an LLC that owns an LLC that owns an LLC, and it takes them a long time to track down who it is, and that's just to get some weeds cleaned up. But they don't have enough people to do that. Another recommendation, and I'm sticking to this one, create a proactive enforcement of the codes instead of complaint-based, because it doesn't work. They just get reported over and over again. And another thing that was not – that we didn't have access to, and this is a problem right now, and it has been for the last year. When code enforcement decided to turn over weed and JMV cases to the police department and have their resource officers, or they call them community service officers, they were supposed to go knock on doors and talk to people about weeds and junk motor vehicles in the yards. And then the police department quickly got behind and they couldn't do it. Well, Mr. De La Torre told us in one of the sessions we had that they were catching up on that.
12-13 isn't opening?
Pardon? Did you have a question?
No, no, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I had a call that I had to take. I'll be right back.
Just turn yourself on mute. So, Leah, you went ahead and put in the all the attachments is what you ended up doing.
You had had two of the attachments there already.
Uh-huh.
The letter from counts from, I guess, from Joyce Garland.
Okay.
And then the scope. I had added the full CE manual, which is quite long, but as an attachment, I went ahead and added that full thing. And then I did add as well the Excel, a printout of the Excel list of the cases you got and all of the documentation of those cases that you got to review.
You know what? We need also the notes of the commissioners who did the reviews. I have an Excel spreadsheet with the notes on them. Because that's not this. So one is we have the list of all the cases. And then we also have our Excel spreadsheets. So we need to send you those.
The Excel spreadsheets that you guys had your cases on, that then you can fill in your information on, like how many days it has been. And if,
is that in there somewhere?
No, and I don't believe I ever received your filled out spreadsheets.
Right.
I have the copy of the template that we sent you.
Yeah. And so let me just send you a copy here. Let me see here. I guess I could take. Yeah.
I mean, I wonder, like,
you know, pardon?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I didn't send mine over yet because it's not fully filled out because I got to the column that said process followed, yes or no. And notice dates meant yes or no. And I needed to go back and figure that out. And put those notes in there. But I did fill out my auditor notes and whether I thought it was timely or not. And so I think we need these from the commissioners. Let me just send you back the spreadsheet so you can see what I'm looking at. Let's see. Okay.
Would you want all of that as the attachment? So, like, I feel like you have the list and then your guys' data collection notes on that list is slightly repetitive. Maybe there could just be one of those as the attachment.
Okay. Let's see. I hope Mr. Clark comes back because
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Yeah. Let me just get you. Mr. Clark, did you have an Excel spread? You got an Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, yeah.
Did you fill out the information in the spreadsheet? Because it needs to be part of the record for the report. So in our spreadsheet, there was one that said, the first tab said data collection, and it had the cases, and then we were supposed to fill out whether the process was followed, yes or no, whether there were adequate notes, and whether notice dates were met, and whether it was timely in any auditor notes we had. And so I've got mine mostly filled out, but
I didn't do that exactly. What I did was I went over the sheet and marked my comments on a separate sheet and then included those in the, what I submitted to the commission.
Okay. Yeah, I think, is it possible to go back and fill out the information? Or at least some of it? Or it's too general? What are your notes? Your notes are general.
Well, I noted there were, I think, six that I found were totally ineffective in terms of assessing them.
Uh-huh.
Because it looked as though there had never been an inspection. It was immediately transferred from the complaint.
Uh-huh.
That it was sent off to somebody else. And
right.
It didn't even look like there was an inspection done.
Yeah, because it said referred, right?
Yeah.
You have some in here. Yeah, referred. So referred means they gave it to the police department.
Without even inspecting to see if the complaint was valid.
Well, they were using the police department as their inspector. So
and
they
then,
just, they outsourced
it. Then it was left as follow up with code enforcement. But there was never any initial and there's never any indication that the police did anything or that they actually completed the complaint.
And you probably missed that part of one of the meetings somewhere along the way. The police do not have access to code enforcement's database, so they could not enter anything. And this is the group of cases, and there's hundreds of them. This is a group of cases that Mr. De La Torre was saying that they're almost caught up on. So what they had to do was they had to go take all these cases that said referred, and then go out and visit each site. So that
was not on any of the spreadsheets that I had.
Because they hadn't been done yet. They just recently took them back into code enforcement department instead of the police department. And so, yeah, that's all we have. So hundreds of cases over the entire year weren't looked at. And, or if they were, we don't know which ones, and neither does code enforcement. So they have to go out and to each one of those addresses and assess whether they, whether that issue still exists. And then if it does, then they're issuing a new code case. And if it doesn't, or I don't know if they're issuing a new case, but if it doesn't, they're taking action on it. But if it doesn't exist, they're closing it. Yeah, it's all goofed up. And the other thing that I realized when I was reading the code enforcement manual last night, it is a cross between a policy document and a somewhat of a work instruction. It's more of a policy document.
Right.
And I think one of my comments or one of my improvement opportunities is to make it a work instruction. Because what they don't say in there, which is what's happening right now, they don't say, and their system is lacking in a few things. They don't ever say what date in order to know whether something's effective or not or efficient, I guess. They never say the date that the complaint was received from the complainant and from the reporter. You only know the date it got entered into the system.
Right.
I mean, I know for a fact that there's people in my area who've reported things over 2-3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. It's not in the system yet. And so you can't know whether this system is effective or efficient. Well, effective is a different thing, but efficient. Now,
well, that's certainly one recommendation that the date be entered the date be recorded when it was received. And, otherwise, how can you know if it was done timely?
Yeah, you don't know. So I think I'm going to go back and revise my notes and say there's no way to know whether it was timely or not because the date that it got reported is not in the system.
Right.
And so we just know the date that it got typed into the system, not the date it got reported by the person. And the way it works is if you call them on the phone, a person answers the phone and they type, I'm pretty sure they type it right into the system. But if a report is submitted on their online form, up until last Sunday, there was no acknowledgement that they got it even. And there was no date that the report was received, just the date it got input. And so last Sunday, I looked at their system again, and all of a sudden they changed the input screen. And if you report something, it'll give you on your own screen at least an acknowledgement that the report was received. But it's not an automatic thing. These guys don't have, they have very old tools. The current system, if a person reporting something goes in on their online form and types something in, it doesn't go into the system right away. It just shows up as an email or some kind of an input or something that needs to be typed in or then imported in. But
that was one of my recommendations, is that they change their procedures. And I was really disturbed by a number of those where it got referred on the date it was entered. And there was no indication that anyone had ever gone out to see it on any of the cases that I was reviewing.
Yeah, you know what? I don't think I was clear enough on that. Okay.
What recommendation would that have fallen under?
Well, I don't know exactly. It's all the referred cases. So document all referred cases.
Yeah, my two biggest issues on that were the training, the supervision, and the programming. And the program is woefully inadequate, I think, to support their function. And just from what I saw on the various reports and the way they were, some were very complete and very detailed, and others were just undecipherable in terms of what was done. So that seemed to be a training issue and a supervision issue.
Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah, that was the thing about training. When we talked to the lead inspector and he talked about training, he said he trains everybody, but he doesn't have any training documentation on what he trained.
Right.
Well, actually, he's got like PowerPoints and stuff, but there's no training records to show what anyone was trained on, and there's nothing that shows competency. And so there's a lot of stuff you have to be competent at. You have to know the codes. And there's no documentation on any of that. And there's no documentation on how to fill out the record inside of their computer software.
Right. I thought that was a supervision issue.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or, yeah, it's just that they don't have a system. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, okay, so let's see. The rest of this report. But so how are you with the recommendations? Let's see here. So one of them was, okay, so efficiency of current code enforcement practices, that was a section in the report. I really don't know what to put in there, except there's inadequate information to determine if it's an efficient process. I couldn't figure out what conclusion to come to on that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I go back to what you had indicated, a couple of things that I was not sure of. For instance, you recommend that assessment fees should be included. How do you necessarily collect them? Do you have to take them to court? I mean, you can't come up with a gun and take their wallets.
Oh, what are you, now what are you talking about? I don't quite get it.
Well, I was going back to, I think, number 7.
Okay.
No, 5, I'm sorry. Assess fee for reinspection.
Uh-huh.
How?
Oh, they send, they get a bill from, finance. The city sends them a bill.
And?
Like, does the city ever, if they don't pay, does the city utilize collection services, or does the city just let it go?
They can, but what the city...
Like that code enforcement issue,
but what this, yeah, so what the city said is, oh, we just don't, we don't try to do that anymore because we don't want to try to collect it. And it's like, okay.
So so it seems that the city now just... drops it as opposed to following up on that collection.
Yes. But it's still in the code. It still says it in there. You know, assess a fee. The neighborhoods have complained over and over again about assessing this fee. If it's in the code, you should be doing whatever's in the code. So this comes back to their, actually, I'm not sure if that one's in the code. I think it is. If it's in the code or if it's in the just the manual, I'll have to go back and look at that. Pretty sure it's in the code. And so they just go up and they just go back and forth with this. So depending on who the head is of code enforcement, they say, no, we're not going to assess the fee. And then somebody will come and say, okay, yes, we'll assess the fee. And I think they just moved back to that position a few months ago. I don't know if they're really doing it or not, but if it's in the code, they should be following the code. So,
run into the manpower problem.
You know what? They could have that fee be whatever they wanted to. They could change it. If we had to make more than 2 visits to follow up, then, yeah, there'll be a fee. You know, they have to. But
isn't that kind of a...
Pardon?
If the city isn't collecting the fee, it's a waste of manpower, I think, to keep going back and assessing it and making it larger and larger if it's not collected.
Yeah, it's hard to know. It's hard to know. I mean, they would need to go back and really get some data out of that. There's problems with the fee. We don't know how many times they've assessed it. And they all at the city claim, oh, it's not worth it. But okay, well, how many times was it actually assessed? We don't know if it was 1 or 100. And, so they're basing the fact that they can't collect it on what? There's no data. So it's just all hearsay as to how many. And then the other thing is, even when they collected the fee, the argument, it goes straight to the general fund. It does not, support code enforcement salaries and for people over there. And that's weird. So, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you? The trash people run, I can't remember what they call these departments, but they're self-funded. And so they fund all their operations based on the amount of money that they collect. So we all pay $18 a month or whatever it is for trash collection. And they charge to get into the dump, and then they charge for extra pickups and things like that. Well, they run the department on that. Code enforcement could easily follow that model if they wanted to. And actually, though, what you really want is in the end you want no code issues. So they, over time, if they had a more effective system, they would reduce the number of issues they would have. I really believe that that's true. It might take 20 years to do it, but the goal should be to reduce the number of code cases that you have. These guys are happy with the same number every year. It's impossible to have the same number every year. But the only reason they have the same number every year, so it's something like they have, I don't know, 6,000 cases a year or 7,000 a year or something. And they, that's all we have every year. Well, that's because that's all that gets reported. So if you have a consistent group of people that report the code issues, you'll have the same number of cases every year. It won't move. There's a lot of weird stuff behind the way people think. But one of the biggest issues that we know of, I've had personally people calling me saying, I don't want to report my landlord, you know, my plumbing's leaking all over my living room, because I don't want to lose my place to live. And now they call us because they got kicked out of their house and they're raising the rent. But that's not code enforcement thing. But people will not report. We already know that. They're too afraid of losing their housing. And so it's just the weirdest problem. So how do you come up with this? We'd have to interview residents and make it be anonymous. And then we'd have to take that information and, write it up. Have you ever used code enforcement? If not, why not? And if you have, you know, what do you feel the results have been? That's why I made that one of the opportunities for improvement, or the recommendations, where number four on the recommendations, revise the metrics to include city, resident, neighborhood, and business feedback. The city should survey residents at least once each year to determine satisfaction. Of course, they're only going to get, a percentage of people writing back, but if it's even 1% of the city, that'd be 1% more than they have now. They do not operate with anybody's feedback but their own. And if the goal of the code enforcement process is to beautify the city and make everything safer, which is basically what it is, you can't go ask the people you just gave the notice of violation to. They're all going to hate you. So we need a cross-section of those people, plus just residents. Hey, how do you think this process is working for you and your neighborhood? Is it making things better? And so, yeah, they need to do that. Other departments have done that. The city's done it. Parks did it. You know, they're running surveys like crazy right now. What do you think should be different with Department of Transportation and Mobility? What do you think about this idea? What do you think about that? Well, code enforcement never does any kind of survey. So the city has our names and addresses, email addresses of all the neighborhood presidents, vice president, treasurer, secretary in the entire city, which I said was 145 or so, 154 maybe. Anyhow, 150 neighborhood associations, they could at least start with that and survey them. How do you think code enforcement's working in your neighborhood? You know, so yeah, they don't. And then as far as fees go, yeah, you could assess it or you could get rid of it or something, but it's definitely a factor.
The issue isn't to collect money, but to abate the difficulties.
I agree with you, and $75 is a pittance. It costs somebody, but going out to a property costs money. So how do you balance how much you spend on abatement, sending an inspector out and having this thing span over a month? Sometimes it was 6 months. Some of these things on the books are over a year. So yeah, how do you justify sending an inspector out? on a whim to go look, and then they didn't do anything, so I got to go check. They have to go back at least once. And I just thought, this,
I wonder if the fees are so much to cover costs, or if they are in a way like just a slap on the wrist punitive thing, you know, to make the person think a little bit more about how they're maintaining their property and they're immediately adjacent.
So maybe the recommendation should be to review the fee to determine if the fee should be done away with or increased. What do you think about that?
So it sounds like some of the changes to the language is that Commissioner Clark wanted to change some of the language in the number 2 on the second page, just about the tight housing market, that this is a little speculative, that maybe with some different language here. And then it sounds like with some of the recommendations that we could maybe expand on the language in number 4 about getting neighborhood feedback and really touching base with the neighborhood associations that exist. And number 5, as far as the fees and all of this. And then we did want to add something about the complaint date being in the system to be able to really track if these complaints are being filed up on a timely basis.
And I think I'll put that under efficiency.
Oh, yeah. No, it looks like here there is some element of that training. Wait, this is in relation to training.
And one of the complaints that I found is that the system they are using, the computer system they're using, the reporting system they're using, is totally inadequate for the job. And
yeah.
We keep hearing that they're going to change it, they're going to change it, and the time they're going to change it keeps moving away.
Yeah.
It hasn't been done. And we don't even know if whatever they're supplying as a new system is going to be effective.
I wonder, I do know with the Workday transition, this new ERP system the city is implementing, that a lot of systems are being transitioned over there. I don't know if code enforcement in particular is one of them. I could find out.
When I first started listening to the reports when I hadn't been a part of the commission, they were talking about the new system.
Oh, I know.
Different dates when they're going to actually do it. Now it's sometime in the fall.
It is, correct. October, I believe, is the current go live.
But we don't even know how effective that system would be in their code enforcement procedures.
We don't. You know, interesting enough, I've got on the list to be one of the trainers of the new Workday system.
So
when I'm going through my training to be a trainer, that is something I can try to have answered.
Well, and I know, I bet you anything, though, this system was not chosen for code enforcement. It was chosen for, I think, PDSD initially. And so now, because code enforcement's like a redheaded stepchild, nobody wants them. Nobody's wanted them in their department for a long time. And so they're just like this thing that floats around. Instead of being a real key department, it's like, okay, where can we stick them? And so it's a very that. So when they buy a new computer system, they're not going to be one of the ones at the top being who are evaluating, you know, whether it works for them or not. They're just going to have to be using it. So, yeah. There's really, it's, you know, a lot of these things, I mean, it is complicated. And it's like that businesses too, you know, for the most part.
And I think your number 2 about the becoming more proactive on enforcing codes, regularly scheduled visits.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty of city workers around the city that might not be in code enforcement in particular, but there's bus drivers and you know, garbage people picking up our trash and whatever. And if they could have the internal, you know, just have some training to keep their eyes open as they're moving around the city in the normal course of their jobs and being able to enter in violations, that might be a proactive approach that some language could get added here to number two as well.
That sounds to me like being proactive in terms of communication.
Yeah.
I mean, you said earlier that the police aren't on their code enforcement. There's no way to get input. That's probably too bad. If they were able to give input, then you would have it. You'd have it in the record.
Yeah, it's really kind of strange. I'm not sure why they couldn't work up a deal with the police to give them access to the records.
And especially with the refuse collection, if they had a way to input when they spotted junk cars and trees that are dying and that, and could make the complaint, it would it would probably again overwhelm code enforcement.
Well, but in the end, though, it's a paradigm shift for residents. So right now, everybody in Tucson thinks, oh, Tucson's so poor Tucson, blah, blah, blah. And they have just said, and I think the city has this philosophical thing in their head somehow, that everybody's so poor, they can't fix anything. They can't pick up the trash. They can't mow their weeds and, you know, they can't do anything. It's very interesting. Because everyone's poor.
That I saw from the cases that I reviewed is those who were making a more complete report seemed to take into consideration whether somebody was 85 years old and frail.
Yeah. Well, then they need to, you know, but there used to be resources for people who were older or indigent or whatever. You know,
it seemed to me that a couple of the report, well, the code enforcement people made referrals to those who could help them, gave them numbers to call so that they could get some help.
Yeah.
The really well done reports documented that.
Yeah. And there's less and less people. However, what I said about this town being 50% rental or close to it, that means a lot of these code issues are by landowners that are running for profit businesses. These people aren't poor.
Right.
For profit businesses.
That also goes to the ability to discover them.
Well, and the problem with not having something like a, you know, once or twice a year, just drive through to find egregious issues is that it puts the burden on everybody, on the residents who live near the bad property, to report it.
That's what I was saying. You've got to be able to locate the landowners.
Well, and that's another code that I wrote in here that the city won't enforce. So there's a code 16, oh, I don't know, it's in here somewhere. It was down in the recommendations, I think.
You said you can't find them sometimes. That seems to be one of the issues. You should be
So city code 16-21, that's in here somewhere. It states that every rental property has to have a local fiduciary, a local contact with the name, address, and phone number. I mean, this is in the code. And code enforcement and the city are not enforcing this. Well, you know what? Then that causes the police department to have to go out and figure out who owns something when something occurs there. It causes code enforcement to have to go spend a bunch of administrative time, and it's expensive to go find this information. So
if you can locate the owners, you've got a lever.
Oh yeah. Well, if they haven't
provided a local contact, they can be fined.
Yeah. Oh, there's a big fine in there. If you read 16-21, there's a big fine in there. You have X amount of days to comply with this and provide the information to the county, or you pay $100 a day or something. It's a big fine.
The first issue, though, seems to be to be able to locate the actual owners. If they don't have a local contact and they're not listed somewhere, you have to be able to go and find them.
Yeah, but look, this code here says, owner, you have to have a local contact. If not, we will fine you. So up until about 10 years ago, they were enforcing this code, 16-21. And they sent a letter out to everybody. I know because I had a friend who owned a house here who lived in Long Beach. She got that letter every year. Be sure you have a local Arizona contact. And this information must be, registered with the Pima County Assessor's Office.
One of the things we have learned, though, is that frequently when property changes hands, you can't locate the actual owner. You have to locate them before you can enforce anything.
Yeah, but most of the time they have the water bill, and they know exactly who turned on the service because you have to have references or a credit card or credit in order to turn on your water. So that's how they all get it. They go to the person who's on record for the water bill. Code enforcement.
You've got to do it. It's got to be in the part of the procedures. Find the owner, get the requirement, and be able to issue the fines to the people who can't afford it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they can do it. That's what they have to do with every single code case. And they, because it's very vague who is responsible. So it says,
what we heard, though, is that their procedures for finding them sometimes comes up empty.
It takes them a long time.
Check the county records, I think.
No, there's nothing in the county records except what's in the county records. You're right. They start there and it says who the owner is, but there's no, that's why they have to send, registered letters. And besides, it says they have to send a registered letter, but, that's how they end up finding the contacts sometimes. But if somebody just decides not to have that not to accept the letter and they send it back, then that's all they can do. Then it makes the process longer. Then they have to advertise, that they have a code issue or something. I'm not sure what they do after that, but usually they have the name of the person who turned on the water. And that's what they're doing. But we would make money on enforcing 16-21, and we would save money and time and be more efficient if they had this enforced. That's what I'm saying in this one. And so they used to do it. So
I think that might be because these rental properties that have to register with the county assessor and yet it's city enforcing the code, that who knows what that intergovernmental communication is.
Oh yeah, so, exactly.
Would be another one of the recommendations, you know, just to improve intergovernmental communication so that code enforcement can better obtain the records of who the property owners are.
Maybe, but I think actually the city enforces 16-21, the city gets that information and then the city feeds it to the county. So it's not like the county has it and they feed it to the city.
Oh, okay.
It's the other way around. Yeah. The city.
There is the interaction between the various entities.
Yes. And that's what I was trying to get at because, code enforcement needs this information. They need to put their hands on it quick. TPD needs it desperately. When they have an issue at a property, they need to locate the owner and, or the, you know, management company. And that information is not known. They knock on doors.
This is more than a code enforcement issue. This is an interdepartmental communication issue. Intergovernmental agency.
Uh-huh.
Communications issue.
Right.
Yeah, it might be going a little beyond the scope of this particular audit engagement.
Like that might be something that the IAPC as the general commission gets into.
Right, right. I know. These things just, okay. Oh.
So, commissioners, to move forward from here, I know we have commented on a few language changes you would like to see, and I can go ahead and attempt to type those out and then resend everybody the updated report.
If you want to put them in a different color.
Sure.
And then, because I've got some notes of my own I want to look at.
Sure.
And then I want to go back through and make some changes based on, you know, what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Remove anything that is, or talk about things that are not facts as potential issues or something like that.
I wonder if as an addendum to our report to the mayor and council, if we would suggest again that there are areas of intergovernmental cooperation that could be looked at, not uh-huh. as a necessary part of this evaluation of the Code Enforcement Bureau,
yeah.
but as a further issue to be looked into.
Yeah. Yeah, because we know for a fact code issues cause more crime. And so if you have a lot of code issues in a particular area, the police have already told us that, you know, the bad people know that you don't care about the area, so they come in there and then you get overrun. So yeah, there's opportunities for all kinds of additional things. I'm looking forward to our next meeting, next week to, or whenever it is, I guess next week to talk about.
The yeah. whole commission. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to advise you of one thing for me.
Uh-huh.
On the 19th of July, I'm going in for a total knee replacement.
Oh, yeah. You said that. Yeah.
And since I live alone, I'm probably going to have to go into rehab after that. So I may not be here at my computer until probably sometime in September or in August.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I just want you to know that
we would have Commissioner Clark. So let me just pull up.
I forget. When is the next meeting, Leah?
It's going to be July 6th and then August 3rd.
Oh, right, right.
And then September 7th. For the regularly scheduled first Wednesday of the month meetings.
Okay.
So, Commissioner Clark, you're thinking that August 3rd one, if you don't have access to your computer, you might be absent that.
Right. I'm afraid so.
Okay.
Yeah, and hopefully, well, anyhow, okay. So, the next meeting is on the 6th, so you'll probably be at that one.
Yeah, and then, I'll be at that.
You know, so as far as this report goes, so Leah, if you want to send me what your takeaways were, I'm going to go back through and read this again and do something.
You okay.
know. And I will also when I see the report, you're going to send me a copy, I'm sure, Leah, and Brian also.
I will, of course.
Yeah.
I will try to submit whatever suggestions I may have on it in case I can't be there for the follow-up meeting.
Yeah, that'd be great. Because I think it'll take at least one more go-around to, because I'd like to hear any other comments that Commissioner Andrews has. He's pretty insightful, too.
Yes.
So, especially on the opportunities for improvement. Or recommendations.
Right.
So do we want to we kind of started talking about like future meetings.
Yeah, I think that's our next topic is just
I'll be available up until the 13th of July or the 19th of July.
That does give us some time. Let me pull up my calendar. About 2 weeks, good 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. So maybe we can look at, I guess, the week of the 20th or something. Although this is the 30th, maybe the week of the 11th for another update meeting on the report to see if we can get the final draft.
All right, so that will be the future agenda. I know last time you said you might want to bring in Carlos de la Tour again just to communicate with him some of your findings. Would you still want to do that?
I don't remember that. Yeah, I don't remember saying that. I don't know how they want to do that.
Like maybe you just issue the report to them and don't bring them back in.
I don't know if they see. I've not been in a subcommittee at all before, and I have not been part of issuing a report. And I don't know what their process has been in the past.
I have no problems with sending them a copy of the report and having them come in if they want to come in to make their own comments.
Before or after the report gets issued officially?
The draft report.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I normally during an audit, you would talk in the end, okay, here's the things that we uncovered and just discuss them. But I wouldn't want to quite do it yet because I want to get the draft more solidified. So not on the next meeting, but maybe there'll be one last one to just say, yep, this is it. Or maybe we can get to the point where at the next meeting, we can just make minor changes. I know what you're trying to do, which is make, you know, just some maybe tweaks or something to this thing, but I don't think it's that simple right now. I need to go back through it and take some stuff out, make things clear, put some should-be's or maybe's or, you know, reportedly or something in there. And, it's kind of an interesting problem. Like I said, we didn't interview anybody who was part of the process other than code enforcement. So we had a code enforcement audit, but we didn't interview the public. And the public is the one who uses the process. And so we don't know, we don't have that angle. So if you, well, and then we don't have a lot of some other information too. Like, when did the report actually get made by the reporter? Now, one thing I didn't like in the manual, just one last comment, there is an enormous section in there, goes on and on and on, about the reporter of a code issue, that the name was required and that the person reporting would have their anonymity retained unless legally the records were, you know, subpoenaed or whatever, and they could look at the name. And I cannot figure out why that's in there. And I'm planning on adding a section in there that says, absolutely, these should always be anonymous for the reporter's name unless the reporter wants their name on record. I can't figure out exactly why. So that would be a question for Mr. De La Torre. Why do they need the name of the reporter? Because
it's the same thing. You report anything to the police, they ask you, you have to give your name in case they ever want to follow up with you.
Well, that's different. But Yes, they don't care. I can report to them that there's shopping carts on the street or trash in the road, and they're not going to care what the name was. They investigate, they look for the issue, and if the issue exists, they attack it.
Well, two things I'd like to put into that. If we know who made the report, we can at least get a closure once we get something done so they know the code enforcement was involved. I think that's kind of important in terms of, as you pointed out, people make myriad of complaints and they never know what's been done. So I think that is important. And the anonymity, except when subpoenaed, if you get a court case, you're going to need the somebody who actually saw the circumstances. And it might be necessary to subpoena that person.
You know what? So the other side, like I said, the code issue either exists or it doesn't. Because they won't. It's like if you see somebody speeding, you were going 40 miles an hour in a 40 zone, somebody goes by you at 50 miles an hour, the police would never use that. They have to see them. Code enforcement's the same way. They will not create a case for anything that they don't see and they can verify. And the problem that everybody has with recording, having the name of the reporter documented, is sometimes they slip and they give it up. So the manual says,
anonymity.
Under no circumstances shall the person's name be given out. And so other times they say because I had a case here about a month ago. Somebody got reported, like I was saying, for tall weeds. And then, as soon as the code person comes, of course, they want to know who it is. Who reported me? The issue, the question should be, is it an issue or not? Don't say, let me kill the messenger. We live in different times. We live in a time where people hate each other now. They hate each other for simple things, and everybody's got a gun. And so I feel sorry for the code enforcement people having to go out there and break the bad news to them. And so when you have things in writing, we've seen names show up in cases on the system before. And anybody who looks on the code case can see it. We've had to have people's names redacted because we can see it in the file that's open to the public, because that's a public record. And so I don't know where they would keep this information if it was reported. I'm not sure where they're keeping it to make it anonymous. And sometimes they throw the neighborhood association under the bus. And so the inspector, when pushed hard enough, will say, well, the neighborhood association or the neighborhood reported it. Well, they know exactly who that is. So they go to the webpage, they find out the four people on the neighborhood board, and they call them on the phone and start harassing them. They can't, there should be no name required. It should be optional. And I just noticed on their new form that they have online for online code reporting, it is a required field. And you can't have a complaint-based system. It's got to be treated like, 88 crime. You call up, it's anonymous. Otherwise, the city needs, we're working as basically the city's agent by reporting issues. You can't put, and I look at it like, you're a, what do you call it? You're the person who's doing the whistleblower. And they don't record whistleblower names. They keep them anonymous. And you know what? If you don't think that people who report code issues are whistleblowers, they are. And the last thing they want is the drug dealer next door coming over and asking them, did you report me? You know, I mean, and so, again, we get back to the reasons why people don't report things and how it all should be kept anonymous and don't record their name in the first place. It's not needed.
I think that's a pretty good point, only, you know, it's still not going to stop the drug dealer from coming to your door and thinking maybe it was you who reported. So.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And that's, again, that, and that comes back to your thing on communication. Anybody driving a car or walking past a address can report a violation. Doesn't matter what, where you live, and it doesn't matter where that house is, as long as it's in some city and you call the right agency. So yeah, a lot of people get really, you know, on both sides. But yeah, so we're really big on anonymous. And you just, you know, but I agree with you. If somebody wants, but here's the thing, Mr. Clark. Code enforcement never calls anybody and says, hey, that case is taken care of now. They do not have that in their process. That would be a big imposition.
I suppose if the thing gets abated, whether code enforcement was actually responsible or whether just the person who had it was responsible.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's abated, that should be satisfactory to whoever makes the complaint.
Now, what they do, if you do make a complaint online, and they probably say it when you call on the phone. Actually, they don't. Sometimes they don't acknowledge that you get it when you get a recorded a complaint online, except starting last Sunday. And they give you a picture of it on the screen now. And I'm not sure if at the bottom of that screen, they even tell you how to follow up on it. But the public can go to the city's website and they can type in the address and find out all the details on that code case and where it's at and the dates. Everything we looked at is viewable by the public. And so, but then it's a matter of telling people where to find it. So a lot of times people don't know how to find it. And so, yeah, that could probably be better on how to do it. But anyhow, okay, so Leah, you're going to send out another copy of this. And Commissioner Clark, please feel free to print one out if you want to and hand redline anything. And scan it and send it to Leah. And then, so if you have some major, you know, there's some things you want to see changed, whatever it might be, just, you know, feel free to do red lines or whatever and say, you know, hey, this should be dropped or this is too vague or this is no factual data, whatever. You know,
I will happy to try to comply, but I have to tell you that I'm still working with stone tablets rather than.
Yeah, I know. That's part of the problem. Yeah. I know what you mean. I'm not always the best at technology.
All right. And so our target for the next meeting would be the week of the 11th.
Yeah, I think that would, if that's doable. Sometime in that week, if you could send an email out to everybody and just ask them, hey, are you available?
Yes, I will. So Monday 4th, Tuesday the 5th, I will attempt to have. So that'll give me the weekend to polish some of this report.
Okay. And I'll work on it on my end, too.
Fantastic.
Okay. Okay, so unless anybody has any objections, I'm going to call this meeting over. And everybody have a nice 4th of July.
Thank you.
You too.
And thanks for attending. It's appreciated.
You have a wonderful rest of your day, and I will see you both next Wednesday.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.